This episode of the Hard Man Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Alpine Gold. By Joe Garrisey with Backwards Planning Financial, by Premier Body Armor, Private Family Banking, and finally, by Max D Trailers. Well, welcome to this episode of the Hard Man Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Kahn, and excited that you could join us for this episode of the podcast. We're going to be talking today about Lonesome Dove and what we can learn about Mr. Nice Guy as one of the characters in Lonesome Dove. Of course, the book by Larry McMurtry. Recently been rereading that and finding some really interesting stuff there for our discussion on masculinity and womanhood too. Before we jump into the episode, I do want to make you aware of a few things. Number one, if you're not yet a supporter on Patreon, we've had some exclusive content dropping there most recently, and you're going to want to check that out. So if you're not yet a member, you can join today for as little as $5 a month. Recently, we talked about why do middle-aged career women remain single. We were talking about a Daily Mail article that ran in 2017, was updated more recently. But you've got a lot of middle-aged women complaining that, younger men don't want to date them. And they're having a hard time figuring out why that is. They want younger women who can bear children. Go figure. So we were talking about this most recently. And again, that's a Patreon exclusive. So I encourage you to check that out if you have not already. Also want to make you aware of two more things. Number one, King's Hall podcast dropping this week, season 3, episode 1. We're delving into Christendom 1.0. And in this episode, we're talking about the Politically Incorrect Guide to Christendom. That show is already up for Patreon supporters, as well as a Patreon exclusive on the King's Hall podcast, an interview with Dr. Glenn Sunshine. What was Christendom? What are all the things that it stood for? What do we mean when we say that? And is it worth rebuilding? Pastor Dan Burkholder and I sat down with Dr. Sunshine to talk about this. Really phenomenal interview. Sort of one of those red-pilling the already red-pilled crowd like ourselves. And that was really, really insightful and helpful. So I'd encourage you to check that out on Patreon. Tons of exclusive content coming in season 3 on the King's Hall podcast. And finally, I want to make you aware of the conference. We have a conference in June 6th through 8th. We'd love for you to join us. We have a larger venue this time. So we've already got about 200 people who are signed up for the conference. We'd love for you to be added to that number. One of the things we've done is make family-friendly pricing more of an option. We'd love to see families be able to attend the conference, join us. We're going to be doing singing as part of the conference. We've got psalm singing, of course, maybe some sea shanties. Pretty sure there's going to be sea shanties led by Pastor Brian Sauve, so that's going to be excellent. You can also grab a ticket for a concert that Pastor Brian is going to be putting on for some of his Hearth Songs music. That's going to be really, really excellent, I believe. And we'll be excited that you could join us. And then if you're single, or if you have a single daughter, single son, we've got singles mixer pricing is up. You can go to newchristendompress.com/conference. Check out the link there. Buy your ticket today and join us next June in Ogden, Utah. That's the New Christendom Press Conference. Host of wonderful speakers, including Dr. Joe Rigney, got Dr. Stephen Wolf, Pastor Joel Webben. We've also got Pastor Chase Davis. We're excited for these guys to be talking about a number of things, including why is multiculturalism bad? Chase Davis is going to be talking about how to kill a movement coming out of Acts 29. How do you kill a movement? And hopefully that'll be instructive for how to not kill a movement like our own. So again, we'll be excited to host that conference, excited for everyone to join us. It's going to be a really great time. We also have a VIP business mixer for guys who want to connect on the business side of things. So be sure to get the right tickets for you and your needs. Again, newchristendompress.com/conference. And now without further ado, we're going to jump into the main episode. Originally published in 1986, Larry McMurtry's Lonesome Dove won the author a Pulitzer Prize. The book, which is a part of a series, is a masterpiece of a Western novel. and it follows former Texas Rangers Augustus or Gus McCray and Woodrow F. Cole as they make their way from the South Texas border town of Lonesome Dove to Montana on a cattle drive. Now, one of McMurtry's strongest suits, I believe, as a writer is his engaging and witty dialogue, and this seems to be best showcased in Gus, whose clever comments and devil-may-care attitude is always on display. McMurtry is also good at creating believable characters that play off each other, as he does with Gus and Call. The captain, Call, is all business. He likes to be alone, and he can't stand Gus's constant pestering, and this causes quite a bit of laughter. I find myself often reading the book and laughing out loud, as I'm sure my family members appreciate the chuckles from rooms away, wondering what exactly is going on. So often, Gus's constant pestering shows up as rhetorical jabs directed at Call. So often, Call will just ignore him and walk off, which is probably the best way to handle a character like Gus. Now, Lonesome Dove is also full of insight about the human condition and relational dynamics, which shows up quite often in his incisive descriptions of the male and female sexes. Whether it's the relationship between Jake Spoon and Lorena, or the brief interaction between P.I. and the widow Mary Cole, McMurtry realistically and insightfully describes features about the way men and women interact. Like a good comedian or a social critic, McMurtry is able to name and to describe something you've been staring at your whole life, and you know it's true, but you just can't explain it. McMurtry, it seems, was a master at noticing the intricacies of human relationships and developing them into engaging narrative. One of the best portrayals of today's passive man comes through the character of the sheriff, July Johnson. Johnson typifies what I've called in other episodes Mr. Nice Guy. He is most akin to the servant leader type that evangelicals today love to promote as the ideal man. He's utterly predictable, mostly harmless, and completely clueless when it comes to how he's supposed to behave around women. His sister-in-law, Peach, orders him around constantly. He dislikes her, but he's powerless to do anything about it. She reminds me of many deacon and elders' wives in churches today, bossily running the show behind the scenes. Maybe she doesn't have a title, but yet she's able to cause the men around her to bend to her will because they're ultimately afraid of her. And so July is caught in between Peach and his wife, Elmira. He's somewhat of a doormat who will never correct his nagging wife. As a result, she despises him. Along with Joe, her son from another and less reputable relationship, because July won't stop her, she rules the roost in their home through constant nitpicking and scolding both of Joe and of July. We find Elmira bored and always wanting to be alone. She won't eat supper with July or her son. She often scolds July for the way he drinks buttermilk and spends her lonely nights fantasizing about Dee Boot. Now, Dee is the bad boy gambler drifter in her past who is also Joe's father. She told them that Dee died of smallpox, but it was a lie, really, to cover her past fornications. Despite the fact that Dee told her essentially to get lost, she still somehow finds herself daydreaming about how spontaneous and exciting he was, and she's missing his relationship. It's your typical female fixation with the bad boy type. Despite the fact that the bad boy type has continually ruined her life, that type is all she can think about. July Johnson, on the other hand, is a sheriff and responsible for policing a raucous town, yet he can't seem to find the wherewithal to stand up to his own wife. Again, a common theme in today's world. Competent business or military or law enforcement guys who can run teams of men. They can bark out commands. They can have tough conversations with employees about workplace performance, but they can't seem to stand up to a scolding or controlling wife. McMurtry writes this. July had arrested plenty of people who misbehaved, yet he could not bring himself to say a word to his wife about her unusual behavior. Joe didn't share July's discomfort with the fact that his mother seldom came to the table. When she did come, it was usually to scold him, and he got scolded enough as it was besides. He liked eating with July or doing anything else with July. So far as he was concerned, marrying July was the best thing his mother had ever done. She scolded July as freely as she scolded him, which didn't seem right to Joe. But then July accepted it and never scolded back, so perhaps Joe thought that was the way of the world. Women scolded, and men kept quiet and stayed out of the way as much as possible. End quote. July's sheepish behavior is a lesson taught to the young boy Joe about how men and women are to interact with one another. In this case, it's a terrible lesson. Most of the women take on this type of behavior in McMurtry's story. They embody today's feminist ideal, except with the warts on full display. When she ran around with Deep Boot, Elmira was what McMurtry calls a sporting woman. She's learned to control the men around her through her nagging and, as is the case with July, by withholding sex. After getting relentlessly chewed out by his wife for getting jaundice, as though that sort of thing was a man's fault, July then retreats to a sullen self-pity around the table by himself. He simply sulks. Finally, he works up his courage and he decides that his Mr. Nice Guy shtick will get him some marital intimacy. Instead of confronting his wife's berating and negative attitude, July asks her if she wants him to go get her water and draw her a bath. She promptly ignores him. Instead, she goes into a daydream about the man who abandoned her, D-Boot. Of this, McMurtry writes, quote, Elmira didn't answer July because she didn't really hear him. It was peculiar, but July almost never said anything that she did hear anymore. It seemed to her that the last thing she heard were their marriage vows. After that, though, she heard his voice. She didn't really hear his words. Certainly, he was nothing like Dee Boot when it came to conversation. Dee could talk all week and never say the same thing twice, whereas it seemed to her that July had never said anything different since they'd been married. Well, Dee, he had given her a sweet kiss, told her to look after his boy, and left her with $10 in the memory of their reckless years together in Abilene and in Dodge. She had known he wouldn't take her north with him. Dee traveled alone, always. It was only when he settled in a town to gamble that he liked a woman. But he had offered to go shoot the buffalo hunter who had used her so hard. She had pretended she didn't know the man's name. Dee wasn't a hard man, not as hard nearly as the buffalo hunter. He would have been the one to end up dead. As for July, it had been no trick to marry him. He was like some of the young cowboys who had never touched a woman or even spoken to one. In 2 days, he was all hers. She soon knew that he made no impression on her. His habits never varied. He did the same things in the same way, every day. 9 days out of 10, he even forgot to wipe the buttermilk off his nice upper lip. But he wasn't hard like the buffalo hunters. With him, she was safe from that kind of treatment, at least. July Johnson had always taken pains to be as nice as possible, sharing all the chores with little Joe and sparing her inconveniences whenever he could. Yet it seemed the more polite he tried to be, the more he stumbled or said the wrong thing or generally upset her. At night, it had gotten so he could hardly put a hand on her. She looked at him so coldly. She could lie a foot from him and make him feel that he was miles away. It all made him feel terrible, for he had come to love her more than anything. "Wipe your lip, July," she would say. "I wish you'd ever learn, or else stop drinking that buttermilk." Despite his politeness and constant kindness, Elmira felt a bitterness toward him. The thing he didn't know was that she was with child. He wouldn't know it either, if she could help it. She had just married out of fright. She didn't want him or the child either. As she heard him walk off through the darkness, her spirit sank even lower. It seemed there was no winning in life. She wanted July and Joe to be gone suddenly, so she would not have to deal with them every day. Their needs were modest enough, sure, but she no longer wanted to face them. She had reached a point where doing anything for anyone, well, it was a strain. It was like a heavy work. It was so hard. End quote. Now, a few things are worth noting. First, Elmira is genuinely a bad woman, and she has tricked July into marrying her. We must admit something that feminists in our day and many cucked men won't, and that's this, that there are bad women out there who will use and abuse men. One only need think of the recent example of the woman who trapped MLB pitcher Trevor Bauer, who was no saint himself, by the way, into some raunchy sex choking session with the intent of falsely accusing him and trying to steal a bulk of his money. As Kanye said, well, she wasn't messing with no broke, pitcher. But there are many cases of women tricking and trapping men in marriage that aren't anywhere near that glamorous or outrageous. Maybe a woman acts like a total flirt, she gets herself a ring, and then she stops having sex with her husband and amplifies her mean-spirited nagging. Maybe she falls out of love with her husband, all while falling in love with the men in Netflix rom-coms. And sometime after that, she leaves with his kids and half his possessions and income. So it's a simple warning to the men and to the young men especially. Be careful who you marry. Make sure she's a good woman. Think Proverbs 31. Make sure she, unlike Elmira, isn't a lazy sporting woman who's only pretending to be a trad wife. It's true, women can ruin men, and men need to know that. The chief warning in the book of Judges at the beginning was for fathers not to give their daughters to women who worship the idols of the pagan culture, and would therefore lead their sons away from the fear of the Lord. There really are harlots in this world, and our sons need to know it. As Phil Robertson once said, a woman can hide a whole lot of evil behind her makeup. As the saying goes, gold is the money of kings, silver is the money of gentlemen, but debt is the money of slaves. If you're tired of seeing your wealth sapped by the silent theft of inflation, consider adding gold to your financial plan. Gold and silver have been recognized as sound money and a store of wealth for centuries. Converting your savings into gold and silver will protect and preserve your wealth so that one day you'll be able to pass down a true inheritance to your children's children. That's where our friends at Alpine Gold Exchange come in. Offering 0% buy-sell spread, gold leases with up to 3.5% annual return, paid in gold, by the way, and secure vaulting right here in Utah, Alpine Gold approaches every transaction with fairness, honesty, and respect, reflecting a strong Christian business ethic in all that they do. Head to ogden.gold today or tap the link in the description to sign up or schedule an appointment to speak with an Alpine Gold advisor today and see what would best serve your family. And just so you know, if you schedule a call, you'll be talking with our friends Jace, Ethan, or Stu, three members of Refuge Church, right here in Ogden, Utah. Do you desire to be shrewd financially for the sake of your family and future generations? Well, we know that a robust society depends on getting this right. Success in building and passing on personal wealth. Let's be mature, responsible leaders with the resources God expects us to turn a profit on, to love our children and children's children well. Joe Garrisey with Backwards Planning Financial integrates investments, debt, insurance, tax strategies, and legacy planning in a holistic approach, coaching his clients to act wisely. You can do better than you received, you can affect your family's trajectory, and maximize your efforts to set up long-term fruitfulness. Joe starts with your values and goals, then provides impactful counsel to help you form and implement your financial plan. Click on the link in the description for Backwards Planning Financial and contact Joe today to get started. Second, like many women, Elmira still has a thing for the bad boy. And so for a woman like her, a steady, nice guy is never going to satisfy. Now, to some extent, this shows how terrible of a person Elmira is, sure. But it also displays something else. Women, even good women, want a man who will stand up to them, who will show some streak of audacity or boldness or virility. While DeBoot is a lecherous and a no-good man, the qualities he has are still on the spectrum of boldness, and that is more attractive to a woman than a doormat like Mr. Nice Guy. On the other hand, consider July's response to his wife's behavior. Rather than confront his wife, July takes the nice guy route. Remember the quote we just read. Despite his politeness and constant kindness, Elmira felt a bitterness toward him. So July thinks that he can draw her a bath and do all the chores and she'll give him sex and affection. In his mind, this is what we've called the hidden contract of marriage. It's what Mr. Nice Guys live by. Now, I can recall before we were married, an older lady in the church had given my wife some advice. She told her, she said, make sure when your husband comes home, he has to do all the dishes and play with the kids and clean up around the house. Make sure he allows you to have a nice warm bath for at least an hour by yourself before you would ever even consider having sex with him. You need to make him earn it. Now, thankfully, my wife saw that for what it was and utterly rejected that quite horrible advice. But this is really all it comes down to. It's about withholding sex as a way to get some kind of pool boy servant attitude treatment from her husband. Paul is quite clear in 1 Corinthians 7, by the way, that sex should be given freely and lavishly from husband and wife one to another. Not as a way to manipulate your spouse into doing a bunch of servile tasks for you. Ultimately, too, we can say this. This nice guy routine doesn't work. No, of course it doesn't. Lavishing empty kindnesses on a wife is no substitute for having a spine. You can't nice guy your way out of an emotionally out of control woman. The only thing you can do, and the biblical thing, And you don't have to be mean or rude or angry. You shouldn't do that. But the only thing you can do is to be courageous. In the spirit of Matthew 18, you need to learn how to confront your wife's sin. The nagging, the berating, the picking, all of it. Husbands also need from time to time to protect their sons from such nagging. Even great women will sometimes get fussy. In which case a husband will say to his wife, and sometimes privately, "You need to leave the boy alone. He's becoming a man. Stop nagging." Sons likewise need to see their fathers stand up to their mother, kindly, firmly, with love, but with a spine. Sin cannot be tolerated. And make no mistake, a woman's brawling and nagging and fussing is sin. Just as is a man's passive refusal to confront his wife. It's sin. That's what it is. Third, McMurtry uses the hard soft language to describe July and Dee. Of course, I like this because of, well, it's the Hard Men podcast. Nowadays, I get accused of being some kind of sexual pervert for using this language. The Hard Men podcast. What is this, a homosexual podcast, Eric? And I think the real reason is because everybody today seems to have porn brain, particularly if you're on the left and on Twitter. But until very recently in our culture, and you see this all over the literature, like Lonesome Dove, this written in the 80s, it's not that old. People would talk about men needing to be hard. This happened all the time, and they didn't mean it in some weird sexual way. They meant that men had to be morally and physically hard without talking about some pornographic imagery. Being hard simply meant you were a tough man, and you were a man to be reckoned with. You were not some soft, unmanly, effeminate fellow who could be easily pushed around. You could handle your business. You weren't emotionally or physically weak. You had a capacity for violence, yet you kept that under control. You could be dangerous, but in all the right ways. Now, quite brilliantly, I think, McMurtry ends up calling both July and Dee soft, although they are soft in very, very different ways. Dee is soft for talking a big game, but being a harmless man, which is, by the way, not a good man. Ultimately, he can't and won't protect the woman he impregnated. He sends her away with $10 when she becomes inconvenient for his rambling, gambling ways. July is soft, on the other hand, for being a doormat to a domineering woman. He also says the buffalo hunters who were rough with Elmira were hard men, but in this case, that hardness is definitely a toxic trait. It's a hardness that isn't tempered by goodness, and therefore it becomes wicked. Elmira mistakenly trades the softness of Dee for the softness of stability in July, but it's softness just the same. Many women, in running from abusive men, will find themselves with passive men. Unfortunately, the solution to an overly aggressive man is not a passive man. Both are harmful, just in different ways. The natural question arises, is there anything in between these polar extremes? Are there hard men who are also good and not brutal men? Are there good men who will stand up to their wives but also treat them with kindness and respect? At least in McMurtry's world, they don't seem to exist. That's a question we should all ask ourselves. What about out here in the real world? Can there be hard and good men at the same time? Fourth, women don't want a man they have to coddle like a child. They may think they want a harmless man, but a little boy for whom you have to constantly wipe the milk off their upper lip is anything but sexually attractive. We see this in another relationship in the book between Jake and Lorena. Lorena is a whore that is somehow wooed by Jake, and so she stops sporting. Well, kind of. At first, Jake promises to take her to San Francisco, and so she sees him as a competent potential provider. This is actually the same reason that Elmira conspires to marry July, because he can provide. He's stable. But Lorena soon realizes that Jake is like a small child. He has to be babied every step of the way. He's often petulant and capricious. He throws little baby fits. As soon as she realizes this, her love interest vanishes. And that's the point to notice. Her love interest disappears when she recognizes the little child that Jake is. So she starts trying to control Jake and use him to get somewhere else with her life, namely San Francisco. She also starts withholding sex because she knows she can control him by such means. Like Delilah, she would torment Samson until finally vexed, he broke. And that's what bad women do. We can learn something about this relational dynamic even in good relationships, however. The reality of nature is this. Sexual polarity won't thrive in relationships in which the woman is running the show, exerting dominance, acting as a mother, or allowed to scold the man, basically treating him as a small child. Polarity can only exist when he won't tolerate such matronizing behavior from his wife. He's got to act like a man, which means being bold and assertive and taking charge of the relationship. He's got to set the boundaries and create the order in the relationship. So what is the antidote to passivity? Well, it's a man with a spine. It's a man who will tell his wife, no, enough's enough. He doesn't have to yell or be brutal about it either. And in fact, I recommend being as irenic or non-emotional as possible. You need to be the down transformer when the electrical current is supercharged. Take the emotion out of it and simply address what's going on. But the man also, above all, has to have a spine. He has to speak up and then stand by what he says. He has to set boundaries of acceptable behavior and then stick with them. And he can't reward disobedient behavior. But it's also more than that. He has to provide her with a meaningful mission. He's got to win her heart to that mission. He's got to be more than a boring dolt himself, which means he needs to be interested and interesting, adventurous and audacious. July Johnson doesn't have much substance to him, like many men today, especially those in churches. They're just boring. They're easy to pick on. They're easy to boss around. They're easy to manipulate. And I think that's why Elmira comes to loathe him, just as many egalitarian and complementarian wives come to loathe their husbands. In other words, he has to be a man worth following. Now, fifth and finally, Elmira ends up being worthless in the home. She's a worthless woman. She reminds me of many women I've met over the years. They spent their younger years in college sporting, but eventually settled down into marriage. They chose the normal life, so-called, but not because of any Christian repentance, more like just necessity. The problem is they still kind of have a fondness for the old days and the wild nights and all the bad boys. You can hear it in the stories of the old days they tell. It's not just the old days to them, but it's the good old days. But they traded all that excitement for security and a boring job or a boring guy and a boring life. At least that's how they would describe it. So maybe they have a few kids and they drive the soccer mom van, but quietly they resent their husbands and their children. They drink wine all day and try to avoid any real responsibility. They go through some of the motions, but like Elmira, they hide away, only this time with Netflix and daydreams. That's really what Hallmark is for a lot of lonely women, just relational porn. This sort of woman will end up like Elmira. Eventually, she waits until July has to go in search of a criminal, then she starts to plan her getaway. Even before that, she would sit listlessly on the rail and simply swing her legs while Joe and July ate dinner. She'd ignore her family and turn a cold shoulder to her husband's sexual requests. What's sad to me is that the secular pagan world leaves no better vision for women than Elmira. They tell women that she's the ideal free woman, but this is a great opportunity, I think, for the church to portray the glory of womanhood, because so many women are going to find that this is utterly empty and foolish. Today's episode is sponsored by Premier Body Armor, your top choice for safeguarding your family. What sets them apart? Well, Premier isn't here to convince you to wear a plate carrier around town. Nope. They're focused on innovating armor right into your normal everyday life. Think bulletproof laptop case or lightweight armor insert that fits into your favorite bag and stops most handgun, shotgun, and even rifle ammunition. Unlike much of the tactical industry, choosing Premier Body Armor not only ensures that you're getting amazing armor, but you'll be doing business with a family-owned Christian company. Visit PremierBodyArmor.com today and use promo code KingsHall for 10% off your order today. Got questions? Reach out to customer service or send their president an email directly at alex@premierbodyarmor.com and you can speak to him yourself. Don't wait to invest your family's security, but reach out today to Premier Body Armor. Don't carry a bag? No worries. How about a moisture-wicking athletic t-shirt with minimalist and lightweight soft armor panels built in? Check the link in the show notes or visit PremierBodyArmor.com today. Our sponsor, Private Family Banking Partners, is on a mission to help Christians live out the Dominion mandate by making a stealth-like move away from the mainstream banks and into their own privatized banking system. This innovative system is designed to guarantee uninterrupted compound interest and tax-free growth without exposure to typical stock market risks. To join this growing community that is already building wealth into future generations and converting post-mill talk into post-mill action, contact Private Family Banking partner Chuck De Laderante at his email, chuck@privatefamilybanking.com. Again, that's chuck@privatefamilybanking.com. To set up an appointment and to receive a free copy of Chuck's new book, Protect Your Money Now, How to Build Multi-Generational Wealth Outside of Wall Street and Avoid the Coming Banking Meltdown, go to the link in the show notes for more information. So we have the opportunity to show the true worth and glory of femininity and of motherhood. We desperately need living portraits of wives and mothers who deeply embrace and love the calling of caring for household, husband, and children. So I want to leave you with a few practical takeaways. Number one, men, you have to be courageous and you have to stand up to your wife. This is as important for your wife and for you as it is for your children. If you really want to be a servant leader, well, then follow Christ. He was not afraid to confront sin, especially sin in women. Even when it was with friends or close loved ones, Jesus is direct with them. And so you too need to do that. True love means speaking the truth, not cowering in fear. So be calm, be cool, be collected, but be sure that you confront sin. And remember especially, it's hypocritical to do this if you can't look in the mirror first and start with yourself. Jesus is quite clear. You need to take the log out of your own eye. Then you will be fit to remove a speck from your spouse's. Number two, ladies. This is for you. Thank God if you do have a wise, loving, and kind husband who will gently but firmly address your sin. Remember, the way that you obey your husband is the pattern you're setting for your children in the home. So ladies, if you grumble when your husband tells you to do something, so will your children. If you're not doing it all the way, right away, and with a happy heart, then why would you expect your children to obey in that way either? Well, of course you can't. So that's the same standard for obedience. And by the way, men are modeling this too, by the way that they submit to the authorities in their life. If your children hear you come home and badmouth your employer or badmouth the elders or pastors or other authorities in your life, and that's all you ever do, what chance do you think your children are going to have to obey all the way right away with a happy heart? Of course, that's not going to happen. So again, ladies, be grateful if you have a husband who will address your sin. Finally, men, be audacious. In the way you find a mission and the work you do and the boldness with which you set your life's vision, you need to be audacious and bold and courageous. You need to be an inspired man with a meaningful mission because that's what's truly magnetic, and particularly sexually magnetic, to a woman, right? He's the kind of man that attracts this man of audacity. Again, sexually and otherwise, he draws people to himself. He has worked out his principles, and better yet, he lives by them. So if you're going to lead vocationally and spiritually, you have to be a man worth following. So you can ask yourself that question. What about you as a man is magnetic? What is calling and attracting others to follow you? Are you ahead of your wife spiritually, such that you can be out in front? Or are you treading water while surfing Instagram reels and the world around you burns? Important questions for each of us to ask. Now, finally, I want to leave you with an excerpt from Douglas Southall Freeman's biography on Robert E. Lee. Recently been reading this one. And in one of the sections, Southall Freeman details the most important lessons that Lee had learned during the Mexican-American War. It's interesting that what Lee really learned in Mexico about leadership was that audacity and boldness, which he had seen in Winfield Scott, General Winfield Scott, was what made him a successful leader. And so I think we do well to hear this and to emulate such manliness. Quoting now, Lee was inspired to audacity. This was perhaps his greatest strategical lesson in Mexico, for all the circumstances favored a daring course on the part of his teacher. The nucleus of Scott's army was professional. The forces that opposed them were ill-trained and poorly led. Scott could attempt and could achieve in Mexico what even he, bold as he was, would not have undertaken against an army as well-disciplined as his own. When it is remembered that the son of Light Horse Harry, that is Robert E. Lee, received his practical instruction under as daring a soldier as Scott, and followed that by a study of Napoleon, it will not be surprising that audacity, even to the verge of seeming overconfidence, was the guiding principle of the strategy that Lee employed as the leader of a desperate cause. Well, thanks again for listening to this episode of the Hard Man Podcast. Hopefully it's been beneficial for you. We appreciate all of our Patreon supporters. And if you're not yet a supporter of the show, we encourage you to check The link in the show notes, you can join today for as little as $5 a month. That goes a long way to supporting this work and to supporting the work of New Christendom Press. Once again, encourage you to check out newchristendompress.com/conference. Come see us at our conference in June. That's June 6th through 8th. Host of great speakers, including Dr. Joe Rigney. We've got Pastor Joel Webben and a number of great speakers lined up. We're going to have music from Pastor Brian Sauve as well. It's going to be a great time. Again, that's newchristendompress.com/conference. Come and see us at this year's annual conference in Ogden, Utah. Well, thanks again for listening to this episode of the podcast. And until next time, stay frosty, fight the good fight, act like men.